This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back of the Nest Review Show. Sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
What was it that first made you want to become a footballer, Dougie?
Good question. That's all you've done. When I grew up, that's what you've done. You know, you watch, you know, Ken Dalglish and people like that. That's what you've done growing up in Glasgow in the concrete streets. You know, there wasn't a lot to do. I had a little bit of natural ability, and I kind of just, as I got a little bit older at my teenagers, I kind of, you know, knew what it was like. I enjoyed actually training. I enjoyed the training aspect of it and working, so that kind of helped me through, you know, through certain parts of football, and lucky enough to get the opportunity to play for Scotland Schoolboys. The only reason I got that is because, again, trained very hard most nights, you know, running whatever it was, and got the opportunity to come to Queen's Park Rangers. Spent, again, guys, you're asking me stuff that I don't really actually look back. Spent 4 years there learning from Don Howe, Dave Sexton, Roger Cross, Bobby Ross. A 16-year-old lad coming from Glasgow who had natural ability, little bit fitness, but not any coaching. To get coached by Don Howe, then later on Gerry Francis and Roger Cross, was Mike Kelly, Des Dopin, was pretty much what made me. This is why, guys, I'm a huge believer in coaching, huge believer in it, you know, in how you coach. And crucial part of the fact I've got a fantastic philosophy. You know, obviously, I know inside out, I've been coaching the 12s, 13s, right up to the reserves and the first team. And Gary Edgett understands it as well, how you actually train them and how the week's scheduled and how it's the four training sessions you do a week. You know, there's, I don't know if it's changed now, but when I was there for a long, long time, at least two of them, and Wilfred learns this way, at least two of them, you've got to play with freedom. You've got to play in the cages. You've got to get knocked. You've got to get up. You've got to get beat. You've got to win. You've got to just play natural football. The other two nights are dedicated on coaching, on, you know, positions, on technical ability in that position you need, on structure of a team. And then as you start getting through 14, 15, 16, you learn the importance of playing within a team and when to release it and when to not. The two of them go hard in hand. Well, when I come at 16, I had the natural ability in the streets, running around playing, beating everybody and things like that. The Don Howes of this world, God bless him, and Dave Sexton's told me the importance, Roger Cross, the importance, and Gerry Francis, even the importance of a team structure and what is needed in certain situations within that team, on and off the ball. Guys, that gave me a great opportunity and a great learning curve. And all I really done from 16 to 19 was train, double session. Again, it's not feeling sorry for me because I actually loved it. Train, morning, train afternoon, eat, go to bed. Times that by 3 years, guys, and I mean that. Wake up at 19, 3 years later, feeling, you know, you've got an opportunity to have a career and have a living. Didn't quite make it Queen's Park Rangers. I will rattle on a little bit here because I always find this story fascinating. I went, Gerry Francis told me that there was, Dougie, we're going to give you a new contract. I refused to sign it. I wanted to play first team football. So he said to me, okay, I've done a deal with seven clubs, Crewe, Cambridge, Fulham, Barnet, it was whatever at the time, seven of them. I went and spoke to Fulham, and at the time was managed by Ray Lewington. Okay? So I've decided I'm going to leave Queen's Park Rangers to play football. I've spoke to a few managers. I've spoke to Ray Lewington. I decide I'm going to join him. I go on a week's holiday, and when I come back, Ray Lewington's went to Crystal Palace. So I ended up going to Barnet for a year, scoring a few goals, and a year later, come to Crystal Palace with Ray Lewington in charge, buying me for X amount of money. And that's how the journey started.
Fantastic. How much has the approach of people like Don Howe changed? Well, you know, coaches today that much different?
Oh, very, very good question. Yeah, there is different coaches. There is different coaches now. You see, the game is more tactical. So you'll get coaches a little bit take themselves a little bit too serious. And I'm one of them, don't get me wrong, especially Crystal Palace, too much self-importance, too much seriousness. That's something that I've learned over the years, that you've got to maybe be a little bit more humble in terms of what you're doing. In fact, coaches back then were coaches, and I mean that were tracksuit training ground day in, day out, with kids from 16 to the first team players. Remember, the first team players had players like Les Ferdinand, Mark Falco, Roy Weather, Ray Wilkins, Andy Sitton, Paul Parker. There was a fantastic group of players that Don Howe would integrate younger players with and coach them, and have that real passion. I think a coach's role these days is, well, a manager's role, you've got that much to manage. It's you pretty much, it's a relief when you get your tracks on and going to coaching. And I'm a big believer in bringing in sporting directors in this country, because, you know, how I go back to fair about coaching. Now, you know, if you're a teacher or you're a coach deep down, you want to go on the training ground. There's so many aspects of football these days that keep you away from it. And that happened at Bolton, and it certainly happened at Nottingham Forest, where I have to spend more of my time in the office rather than actually coaching. And thankfully, when I was at Crystal Palace, we were just growing. That administration, there was not a lot to deal with, to be honest with you. What there was to deal with, Phil Alexander dealt with it. Steve Parrish touched on certain things that needed to be corrected, and I was just either scouting or coaching. So certainly, to answer your question, Don Howe was the start of me actually learning about what coaching is. Now, everybody could do a training session, but there's a difference between a training session and a coaching session. Training sessions, guys, you put the players on, you blow the whistle, you let them run around and play and have a good time, which there is some points of the season that's needed. And there's coaching sessions where it's structured and you're working a team, you're working in, you know, you're trying to get everybody to think the same way, you're making sure everybody understands on and off the ball. And there were certain aspects in the game I've seen on Saturday. You know, a very well-drilled Crystal Palace team. You know, you've got good characters in there that understand the game as well, which helps as well, you know, when certain times get tough.
Definitely. Okay, cheers for that. Just want to give Albert or Terence a chance to jump in there before I move us on a little bit.
Yeah, when you first came to Palace, did you have any sort of preconceptions of the club? You know, obviously you came, you know, a few years after what would be deemed our golden period. Did you have any sort of preconceptions?
1993, see Ian Wright scored against Queen's Park Rangers, and I was in the stand as an apprentice. He was jumping on the cages after the winning goal. I thought, all right, he's not bad, him, it's a good team. Where is it, South London? That particular year I played against the youth team, the Crystal Palace youth team. So, you know, I knew of them, I knew who the players were, I knew actually a couple of years before, you know, what they were doing, and as you say, the golden kind of years, I knew what they were all about. When I went to sign it, I got a phone call on the, I don't know, during the week, Tuesday night, let's just say, from the Barnet chairman saying, listen, I've just sold you to Crystal Palace. You know, and I'm talking guys nearly midnight, I've just sold you to Crystal Palace. You've got to be down there for a medical at 7:30 in the morning. I was living in West London at the time. I had a map out, sat and wasn't even born yet, guys. I had a map. I was looking, I was thinking, Jesus Christ. So the first time I actually thought, well, how, actually quite far, was when I actually was getting, so I knew the team, but actually quite far. Needless to say, I was 2 hours late. I walked in, I was running in 25, I was 2 hours late, getting to the earth, and I walked in, and Ron Nolan said to me, "Where have you been?" And maybe a little bit cheekily, but not meant in this way, said, "You're lucky I'm here." Ron knows raised his eyebrows, and gave a little chuckle and said, I like that, son, sit down. And that was actually meaning the N25 traffic, so anyway, that's how we started. And we always kept in touch with him right up until, unfortunately, he died because of that moment. We always went back to that little moment.
Great.
Guys, if I'm rambling on too much, just cut
no, me no. The trouble you're going to have is we're going to be sitting here in silence, transfixed with what you're saying. Because it's brilliant stuff. Sorry, Darren.
That's right. When you did come, 20 goals in the first season, were you surprised with how successful you were after making the big step up?
No, guys, I was, not a lot of people do. And I don't do this kind of interviews of this, when a very dear friend, huge Crystal Palace fan, asked me last week, would I touch on news guys? I thought the timing might be right just to sort of, maybe open up a little bit. I was, maybe still, I'm a very, very confident person, especially when I was on the pitch. I was young, I was very, very fit. I'd come from the back of playing at Queen's Park Rangers with wonderful players. People don't forget that, I trained with players, guys. Les Ferdinand, as I say, Paul Parker, as I said, is an international player. So when I went to Barnet for a year and scored a few goals that year, I come to Crystal Palace very, very confident. Ray Lewington, Stevie Cutler was in the background at the time, Peter Nicholas was there. It was a very relaxed atmosphere, and I kind of enjoyed that a little bit. A couple of my mates, David Hopkins, were there. So I was very confident in my ability. I hadn't scored for a few games, I don't think, until I turned up. And then, when I got a couple of goals, I was very confident. Crystal Palace fans, I don't know what happened, but right from the off, we had a fantastic relationship. And I don't really know where it was born from. I just really felt at home. I believe in that. I liked my style, so therefore, I enjoyed playing there. And I was a bit cocky, so I was never really afraid of, I'm never really surprised. Hopefully it didn't come across, guys, too arrogant, but that's how it was back then, or it's maybe still is.
Well, obviously you've got to have that degree of confidence to succeed in football, haven't you? You see it a lot of people, a lot of players with a tremendous amount of talent, but if they don't quite have that bit extra, they don't succeed, do they?
And I think the sort of player that you were, Dougie, you were very technically and, what I would call a flair player. You were very technically astute, but you always tried something, a bit special. I think you have to, like Chris says, you have to have that confidence to try and pull those things off.
Listen, guys, and for all the young listeners out there, practice, there wasn't something, listen, there's a little bit of ability there, but there was a practice and practice and practice. Then when you practice, you're confident that, in situations you can, you can control the ball or you can pull the ball down, and that's always been my kind of attitude. My attitude is, well, look, if I don't know how to do it, I'll go and learn, and that's probably in the management situation as well, and we'll probably get on that a little bit later. If you don't know, you just go and learn. Now the confidence comes from actually obviously scoring goals, and away you go and you feel very at home. I remember, in fact, and this is I fast forward, guys, a little bit when I do become a manager, because I learned when a player is playing, he's got ability but not playing with confidence. I was playing at Nottingham Forest at the time, and for the life of me, I couldn't score or I couldn't beat a man. I was like, I just don't know quite what it was. I was training as hard as I could, 23, 24. I played on a Saturday, rubbish, got taken off as usual, no good. I was like, I don't know what's going here. I got a call from Simon Jordan, Chester Palace, wanted to come back. I was in that motorway and speeding ticket a lot. I played on a Tuesday night against Grimsby, 3 or 4 days later, and I was a different player. I was now having a call to go by somebody, have a shot from whatever angle. So when I go and sign up with a guy, I'm looking also and thinking, he's got ability, he's got this, he's got that, he's fit. He's just not a fit. And sometimes players are just unfortunately not a fit, a manager or a player, in fact, not a fit for that particular club at that for that, for whatever reason, just doesn't fit. The chemistry's not there. And that's something that, and I bring that, my thought process when I was a player, into my coaching and management, and especially when I'm signing players. You know, and Balassi's a great, fantastic story. You know, he's at the Bristol. I'd known him for years, but I've watched him at Barn. I'd watched him a few times. And he was at Bristol City, and I was watching him all pre-season, and he was very, very average, guys. But I knew there was a player in there, and there was a burning desire to do well for himself. I knew he was getting extra training in the afternoons, his own sort of particular coach. So when I seen him in pre-season, he played a pre-season game for actually Bristol City's reserves. He wasn't very good, but I knew if I could get him in an environment that pushed him and thrived him and gave him an opportunity, then I believe because of that story, my story, then you would get the player up there. Because I'd seen a player on before in certain games, you know, at Barn especially. So I kind of used that. Rewind 20 years to sign players as well.
That's amazing to hear, because obviously fans always talk about, you know, is that guy a Palace player? You know, he's this, he's that, but is he a Palace player? Well, obviously there is something you're saying, there's something very much to that, you know. Is it always something that's tangible? Can you go out and say that that's definitely it, or is it, you know, I suppose what I'm asking is, does it change?
I don't think it changes, guys. Look, I can't answer you every question about every single player. Why does person go to Real Madrid and be successful? Some players do, some players don't. Certainly not tangible. And I think, you know, it's like a chemistry. You know, there's a gut instinct born out of your knowledge of maybe the area or your relationship with fans or chairmen or managers or coaches or kit men. That's, it all goes down, it boils into that. You know, it really does. You know, there's not, you know, all I try to do when I take in the manager's job at Crystal Palace, all I try to do is just build an environment, guys. And the culture was made out of hard work. You know, people see me, oh, they said the culture was just hard work. The culture was just throwing everything at it, turning up every minute of the day, asking every player to turn up every minute, training very hard, keeping everybody away from the training grounds. I banned everybody. You know, Steve Parish and you laugh about it, but I'd ban everybody. Nobody's allowed in my training ground. Don't care who you are, don't care who you used to be, I don't care what agent you are, get out of my training ground. This is mine. In fact, Steve Parish, in fact, you know, at times I see him walking, you know, I understand now that's probably not the best thing to do, but the culture was born of this hard work, because I didn't want anybody to fail because the chemistry wasn't right. So it's not tangible, it's the feeling you get. I don't know, guys, when you walk into a wine bar, I'm sure if you do that, or you walk into a or you walk into a pub, or you walk into somewhere where you think, oh, this is nice.
I tend to run into those.
Yeah, you run in there, or the restaurant you might run into, or a Burger King, or whatever you run into, you think, oh, this is nice. That's what I'm trying to say to you.
Okay. A little bit of a diversion now. It's a sort of fairly common question, really, but who's the best player you played with and the best player you played against?
Best player I played against by far is Tony Adams, by far. I was not in the Forest. I thought I was not baggy. I was mid-20s. I was in the Premiership at the time. And you know what? It was just an education, guys. It was an education on what not to do for me. So here's me being coached, me being trained, me being up to a certain standard. And I come up against Tony Adams. He just, you know, it's a great learning curve, because later in life, I try and get a set of young strikers to try and position the defender by your movement. So you can position them, you know, by your movement, either by taking a shot to get to come with you, whatever. Now, Tony Adams is the defender positioned me because of his position. So he taking his position in relation to the ball, and it made me stand in a certain way that I had pretty much no chance of ever getting it. Because if I got it short, he was up my backside, taking it off me. If I went long, you know, he was actually comfortably heading it back to the goalkeeper, seeming whoever it was. So, by far, now there's a lot of good players I play against, but he was just that little bit above everybody in terms of technical ability, control on his back four, not wanting to push up. I played against him a few times and pretty much dreaded it.
What about...
Best player? Ooh, real hard one. Oh, real, real hard one, guys. again, you got me in a very good night tonight. I'm actually quite relaxed in life these days. I probably would have answered it a few years ago. So I don't look back too much, so I can't. I've not got one at the top of my head. I'm not kind of.
You played the Lombardo, right?
Lombardo was good. He was good. He was good. He was different. He come from a background where he on the international stage, he kind of knew what he was doing. Ian Wright was good. Oh, I played it not in the Forest with Ian Wright. Movement, dedication, enthusiasm. This is what he used to do, Ian Wright. You do shooting practice, be a line of you, 4 or 5, you 6 or 7 shots. He'd hit his shot, keep a save, but probably go in the back of the net. He'd run and get his ball and go to the front of the queue. And say, right, you've got to go to the back, and there's a queue. He said, Daddy, I don't mind the queue, missing my profession. To go to the front of the queue. You say, you're actually very close to nearly actually serving. If you're like, come on, it's got to be, this is my profession as well. So it wasn't out of any malice or anything. It was just, Daddy, I've got to get the front of the queue. So right, I've just been waiting a couple of minutes with my turn. No. And then he'd go. And he'd repeat it. Dedication was wonderful. Pierre Van Hondonk was very good, guys. You know, he's a wonderful player to play with. In fact, the best player I've actually, partnership-wise, was him, because he was the only person that allowed me to play number 9, which truly I wanted to play. Over my career, I was always asked to play number 10 and come and get the ball, but I truly wanted to be a number 9 that sniffed goals, and he was the only player I actually played with that detect the ability to find a way to pass. And I enjoyed probably my time with him more. And I scored goals at Premiership for Forest that year more because of him. So there's 3 players there, Lombardo Wright and Van Hondonk, who are players that were a lot, lot better than me, and therefore I admire them and probably up my game a little bit.
Excellent. Yeah, some good names. During your second spell at Palace, I mean, you saw a lot of managerial changes. I mean, the list is as long as my arm. I think arguably the most significant of those was when Steve Bruce left and eventually Trevor Francis came in. How was it as a player to sort of have a winning formula change so drastically? You know, how does that affect you for going from taking that momentum away?
Difficult one. He answered, guys, again, you know, I'm going to keep certain things private because it's not, you know, what happens in certain dress rooms you need to keep there. What I will say about Trevor Francis, there wasn't a lot of people that gave him the opportunity to succeed. You know, he come in and it was very difficult because we did admire Steve Bruce's way of playing. In fact, again, I learnt from this. We had a decent relationship. I was okay with him. I'm unsure if he liked my style, which is fine. That's the way it goes in life. I've had many, many people say that to me, so I can accept that. But there was one thing that I felt that, you know, when he brought an Akinbai, you know, it wasn't what he said. It was the actions that he'd done by playing him in front of maybe Clinton and myself or Jovan who did it. The actions spoke a lot louder than words, and that kind of gave us, I wouldn't say the call, it kind of just dented our confidence a little bit to say, well, we were always playing, you know, what's going on here? And I just felt that was a mistake that he made, but actually as a guy and as a person, you know, I was fine with him, I was fine, but I think by that action, bringing in that player, which actually I actually understand as a manager how he would do that, but you know, maybe explaining that, you know, you're not going to play, you're going to play, but even a better way of doing it rather than just bring them in. So the professional relationship was dented, I think, with the 3 of us, and hence, I think the second part of the season, we didn't score as many goals. Bruce was a different kind of manager. Bruce was pretty much, didn't say a lot to you, trained you during the week. Again, not a coach, a trainer, trained you during the week. Same as Dave Bassett, trained you, kept you quite happy, gave you a kick up the backside if you were late, gave you a pat on the back if you'd done well, gave you a strip on a Saturday, and says, don't let yourself down. And kind of then, you know, and if you did let yourself down, gave you a kick up the backside and gave you a strip back again Saturday, that was his method of management, and that kind of suited me a little bit.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments.
Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay. Last few bits.
I'm very good at ducking questions, aren't I, guys?
That was superb. Absolutely superb. I didn't even notice until you pointed it out.
ask him again.
just a couple of things for your, you know, Palace playing career that I want to get off now. He scored some pretty amazing goals for us. I can think of a volley against Sunderland that's probably my favourite. But have you got a favourite yourself?
I have got a favourite because I've been asked so many times, and I'm not going against the grain here and saying, you know, because people say this goal or that goal. It's just a goal that I felt was as a player growing up, I was playing the streets of Glasgow, so you play against bigger guys, smaller guys, all range of people, so you'd have to do skill, not get kicked, because if you held out the ball and you get taken off, you're getting kicked. So mine's used to sort of dribble, release it. So for that reason, as I grew up, I knew that if I was going to make a career, I've got to score goals in 6 yards. Line tap in, so that's where the coaching comes in, your runs and things like that. But the real goals, the Sunderland goals are technical goal, practice day in, day out. The goal, guys, you probably remember, I scored a goal against Wolves. I think we won 3-2 that night, and I scored a goal where I picked the ball up in my own half and beat a man, dribbled, passed it, got it back, beat a man 1-2, and just slid it under the keeper's legs. That goal, to me, was from my back in the days when I was from the Glasgow streets just running around playing football. A very goal that just comes natural, just to beat players and just feel free. So I would put that there. I get asked quite often, I always kind of go back to that goal because of that feeling.
So I know Terence has pretty much an encyclopedic brain with this stuff. Is there something you
remember? Remember it, Terence? You remember
that? It was 3-2, yeah, it definitely was. I think all the games against Wolves around that time finished 3-1 or 3-2.
It did, yes, it did. Now, Terence, I don't know if that was the night I saw the hat trick or it was, I can't remember, but I really remember the goal. I really remember when I picked it up in that particular night.
Yeah. My favourites, I think Wolves, a lot of them against Wolves. Wolves away, the volley straight from the flick on from the goal kick.
Yeah.
Both against Wolves in the playoff semi-finals were special goals.
That was good. Yeah, that was a fantastic day, that. I'll tell you a story there, Terence, what happened, mate. Real, real big story in my life. This, I played the week before for Crystal Palace against Port Vale, okay? Mm. And I get sent off. Whatever happened, you know, the guy grabbed me, whatever happened, referee, right or wrong, I get sent off. So I'm sent off, and I've been told in the dressing room, this was the last game of the season, if we get to the final Wembley, you won't play. And I couldn't believe it, I was so low. So I walked from the players bar, through the bar, underneath the stands, up to, you know, the bar when I'm going upstairs or whatever, I'm going to my car, and there's 300 Palace fans, as there was every Saturday after the game, having a few beers, discussing the game, and I'm pretty much embarrassed. They're embarrassed. We're in the semi-finals now. We come in, but I'm so low and I'm walking my head. There's maybe one or two tapping their backs and I'm lucky. There's people kind of half not making eye contact with me. I'm thinking, oh, I just felt so low. Rewind 7 days later, I scored a couple of goals against Wolves. We won 3-1, we scored a couple of goals against Wolves. I walked through the exact same bar and the place is heaving and everybody's tapping me in the back and saying brilliant. And it just shows you in football, and it gave me a huge lesson that, you know, when there's ever an up, but when there's an up, there's a down going to come. When there's a down, you can always wait for an up. That's what football gives you, to respond, to react, to come back from the dead or whatever you want to call it. And I learnt that very quickly. So whenever I was down in life, I always thought, you know what, win a corner, this is the opportunity football gives you. Also as well, maybe too much to my wife says it too much, maybe when there was a lot of ups, I kind of didn't enjoy it enough because I thought to myself, it could be a down winner corner, it's just don't get above your station. But it was a huge learning curve for me, playing that Wolves game the second time in terms of what 1 week in football is like.
Brilliant. And I know you want to also touch on Stockport as well.
My favourite ever Palace game, Dougie. I was there as a teenager. What are your memories of that day? Because we've been getting them shared recently. Aki and Mikel Forsell were sharing them on the official Palace channels.
We're having a little talk about it as well. Listen, Aki, just all Aki was is to make up the numbers. Let's get this right here. Mikel, you played a huge part in it and he brought the ball down and that. I can't even remember him playing. He tells me he used to play for Palace. All I do know is this guy used to try and kick me in training. Listen, a wonderful guy, a very, very good player. Didn't get the headlines he should because of what he'd done. Dedication was fantastic. Very good friend to have off the field. And you don't normally get that in football because it's such a... You know, we're all striving to be the best, have the best contact, have the best. And if you can get somebody off the field like Aki, you know, he's a real good guy. That particular game, I felt that I owed... You know, that was my first season, guys, back. So I felt I kind of owed Simon Jordan and I owed Stevie Kemba. And I thought, and I just thought myself, gee, I actually owe these people. So I wasn't... You know, it was a game, and it's kind of good to get this way. It wasn't a game that I was... In fact, not a lot of us, even Clinton, that we didn't have any kind of self, you know, agenda, or there wasn't any sort of selfishness within that group. I just felt that, you know, I owed it to sort of Simon Jordan and Stevie Kane, but that was the two people, Terry Bullivant as well, my coach at Barnet and at Crystal Palace. And these guys, and let's be very honest with you guys, when you're a manager coach, when you step over that white line, you can't really do a lot. The fans play a bigger part than the manager does. Trust me, guys, all these managers put their fancy notepads. Yes, we make the substitutes. Yes, we can have a chat half-time. But the fans, especially the Palace fans, in fact, the fans and the players play the biggest part. So I knew stepping over the line, you know, that's a huge responsibility. I felt very good at that stage in my career. I felt very relaxed, very experienced. One of my most enjoyable games, one of three, is the couple of days before we went to Portsmouth, and we had to win the game. Nobody remembers that. We had to win the game to have any chance to go to the last game, and we won it so convincingly. Stevie Kemba changed it to a diamond. I played up front. You know, I felt great that night. Probably one of my best performances, you know, for the Palace and a Palace shot because we won the game. We went into the Stockport game. It's a strange thing I'm going to say to you here, but maybe just me, but you have a deep, deep, deep sort of belief that you're going to win certain games. And there's other games you think, this is going to be tough. I'm going to try and get my best. And there's other games you think, oh my goodness, I've actually, we got to just dig in here to keep it respectful. That's where you are as a football player. You've got to try and get to the stage where you block everything and feel very confident. I've won in that game at Stockport, I felt very confident. No matter what was happening, we were not getting relegated. So we went to the ground, as per usual, Palace fans everywhere, hot summer's day. I remember big David Hopkin, he could never play in the sun. And I said, Hop, we need you, mate. Get factor 50 on that head of yours. And you better, you know what I mean? And it is, one of the actual days, he never played in pre-season, guys, never. So one of the days that actually did turn up and play in the sun was that game. And, you know, and there was Clark in goal, and there was Smith at the back. There was certain players that played key moments and clearing the ball. Aki, of course. When I scored the goal, guys, it wasn't relief. It was more of, right, that's that done. I kind of knew that was happening. Right, that's that over and done with. And this is where I kind of let myself down. And because I'm a father phone, I try my best to sort of change the way I am. I was pretty much after the game, right, that's that. Let's look forward to next season. We better start well. We better do this, that. We can't be down the bottom again. Which is wrong, guys. Which is wrong. You know, which is wrong. I should say a little bit more. But that was me near the edge, don't we? So that's what I remember of it. That's that job done. Told you that was going to happen. Told you weren't going to get relegated. Well done, Stephen Kemble. Well done, Terry Rovan. There you go, Mr. Chairman Simon Jordan at the time. Fans were fantastic outside the ground, back in the crowd, and very great. But here's me as a player thinking, what's the big fuss here, guys? Maybe going back to the question terms, am I 20 or am I confident? I was. You know, I just was. So that's how I felt. That's how
I'm glad you were, Dougie, because we were really
nervous. Yeah, right. It's wrong. I am saying it's wrong. But that's, you're asking me how I felt. I'm trying to tell you.
Do you think David Hopkin was trying to block the sun from his eyes when he handballed it in it just before you scored?
Hotly us in the summer, I can tell you, he's a fantastic guy as well. He was. Yeah. I first started rooming with Hotly, and no word of a lie, he didn't let me say this, but I don't care. He lives in Glasgow, so he can't beat me up no more. He'd get his teeth through, he'd have a glass of water, he'd old-fashioned have a glass of water beside his bed, and his false teeth would go in the water beside the bed. So whenever I woke up, when it's in a hotel room, and when I woke up and I just see these teeth floating in the glass of water, that was my memories. You know, wow. fantastic player.
Hopkin played a bit internationally as well, as did you. Seamless link there. I'm brilliant.
makes up for that intro.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's incredible you only got two caps. You know, anyone who saw you play would probably be shocked at that. What do you put that down to? And I know Terence has said that if Craig Brown hadn't resigned, he thinks you'd have got more. But what's your views?
Yeah, he's nearly there. Remember, guy, you know, you're starting to get a little bit of insight. And I'm only doing this for, you know, kind of, I wouldn't do this a lot. And it's because of who I am. I wasn't the most easiest player to manage, put it that way. Certain managers felt it was easy. Dave Bassett, no problem managing certain managers. So when I turn up and play, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 games for them, or 21s, and Craig Brown then calls me up. What people don't know, he called me up for 10, 12, 15 international games. Now, nowadays, it's only two subs. So here's me travelling to Russia, Moldova, Belgium, you name it, and sitting in the stand, which was fine. You know, you're waiting for your chance, you're training this. I'm a 21-year-old lad who was just, I was on standby for the Euros 96. I was a 23rd, 4th man or whatever it is. So I was always nearly there. And then I kind of half-snapped about 22, 23, whatever it was, and I just said to Craig Brown at the time, I said, look, listen, wrong guys, a mistake I made in my life. Listen, I've travelled everywhere. You know, I do this, I do that, you know, and I never quite make it. You know, what have I got to do kind of thing? And he said, look, Daggy, I'm a cause. There's a few players in front of me. I said, well, I think I'm better enough. I just give him a chance. I don't think that went down too well. To be very honest with you, I just don't think it did. A couple of more games, I finally got on the bench. True story again, I finally got on the bench. I think, right, that's it. Here we go. I've waited 2-3 years. I've been in, because I didn't get any caps, but I was with the national team for a couple of years, 96, 97, 98, 99, always in the stand. Gary McAllister, Stuart McCoy, I could never get in the team. So I get on the bench. I thought, right, I'm on the bench. And it was the game, again, guys, I should know this, Estonia maybe turned, helped me out. It was the game that they never turned up. The team never turned up. Remember that? And yeah. Scotland had to kick off.
You won 3-0, so, didn't you?
No, the team never turned up. Yeah. I know you probably have a joke there, but that's a serious moment in terms of, you have a get room in here. They never turned up. So I get changed, get my shot on, go back home, thinking, oh, man, is ever going to happen? It then never happened. For a few years, I moved away to Nottingham Forest, didn't do so well, and it was a few years later that Craig Brown in his last game decided to give me a cap, where I was very disappointed. But if Volts comes in, gives me one cap, we get beat 5-0 in France and doesn't pick me again. Guys, I do know deep down, and again, it's maybe an arrogance thing, if I went and put up with Scotland, I'd get more caps.
Yeah.
My decision at the time, I remember I had my first time at Crystal Palace, there was an opportunity to go to Glasgow Celtic, which it was Tommy Bond that contacted me. I never encouraged it, and it never quite happened, but there was communication there. The one of the things was, you can get more Scotland caps, you'll be in the scene, and I just felt at the time, I'd lived in Glasgow, I wanted to come away, I lived in London, I was at Paris, I was having a good time, and it was something I was willing to sacrifice to continue, probably trying to get to the Premiership, and it's something, you know, and it's a strange thing I'm going to say here, but in Scotland, the Premiership in England is not as big as the Premiership in Scotland, believe it or not. And when I was living in London for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, I knew how big the Premiership was in England. So here's me, I'm thinking, I want to get there. That's where I want to be. It's the only place to be. It's the only place to play. So I could have possibly get more if I'd have sacrificed certain things, but I look back and think, that's life. That's the way it goes sometimes.
Okay. It was Estonia, and apparently the Scotland fans were singing, "There's only one team in Tallinn." So there you go.
That's it. That's exactly what happened.
Okay, let's jump into Palace management time now. Obviously, that began with the spell of administration and what happened around that. Terence has just written in our document here that we've been looking at administration stories, so I think that's a demand for some administration stories.
Well, more specifically about, you know, keeping Speroni and stuff like that after Sheffield.
Yeah, my goodness. Yeah, that was tough, guys. I've got some, again, never been told before, because I'm not a storyteller. I don't like to look back, guys, but I'm sure if it's of interest of your listeners, then I can tell you now, but it's not something I've ever told, again. And when you're going to ask me when I left, it's something I've never told, because I've got reasons that I believe it's still. I just kept quiet because, you know what, look, people got on with things and don't sort of look back. I had the opportunity, I was still playing. And this is one of the biggest sacrifices. People say to me, you know, listen, Crystal Palace has been good for me, as I have been. So it's been fantastic, you know, for both of us, no doubt. I had many, many opportunities to move on as a player, especially in the time I was doing well. The B30 Simon Jordan at the time, and his dad, you know, they would always make me feel welcome and stay here and always sign me contracts and always feel at home, because when I left the first time round, it was a real, it's something that doesn't happen no more, you know, it's something that doesn't happen. This is, a few form lads come in, and my mates get sold, Hoppy definitely left, and a couple of my mates get sold, and you pretty much, guys get told you're going to go. So I'd only played a couple of games in the Premiership, and I got a phone call from Ron Nodes saying, "We've just sold you to Wolves." Now, it's an extremely interesting thing. Like, you don't get a kind of option to say, well, I don't want to go. You kind of, I remember taking the phone call thinking, I'm gutted with that. I've done this, we've brought that, and then, you know, it's time to move on. And you just kind of think, all right, that's the way it goes. That was the time you get 10% of your money, you move on, and that's it. Very strange. Nowadays, club, you would. You just won't go, you don't go. People actually sit, people refuse. So, you know, when I come back and the opportunity to go, I always felt, you know, people keep me in kit, and I always felt quite well. So, the biggest sacrifice I've ever made, was when I was still playing. I was actually playing at Southend. I was really enjoying it. I went from doing the reserves for me, one under 16 reserves, which was a great learning curve, guys. Fantastic, you know, pretty much. Me, the physio, set of young lads, driving the oldest shot, driving to Cambridge, in the van, Monday night, taking the game, doing what I've got to do, back in training Tuesday morning with the lads, training, playing a Saturday. That was how it was developing, doing my coaching badges. I then went to Leeds. I thought, you know what, I've got to give it a crack. I went to Leeds and loan, done okay, and then had the opportunity to go a few places. Southend come in, they'd offered me the potential of coaching and whatever management, which I turned down eventually, but they did, and I felt at home, so I went and played. So when the phone call come that we were in administration from Phil Alexander and Paul Hart was going to be managing, they want you to come and help, you know, in a situation, I gave up playing, and it only took me seconds to say yes. But it's something I kind of thought, as the time went on, I kind of regret, I thought, I quite regret that a little bit. I actually wish I'd still played. But again, the decision was made, guys, in the moment. So the decision was made quite quick. And that's what I kind of do sometimes, think, well, I should have. But the biggest sacrifice was not playing. So when I come back, I was actually still thinking as a player. We're in Paul Hart, we're in administration. It's real bad, guys. I've been in administration, remember, the first time when Ron Nodes was seven, and it was difficult, you know, things were starting to go downhill, selling everybody. I'd seen that side of it. And when I come back, it was desperate. The good characters, Sean Derry, Alan Lee, the good captain, Clint Hill, but it was difficult. But I'd still fought as a player, because I thought myself, well, I'm still a player. I was playing last week. And that helped me kind of get through being very close to the lads, being very close to them in terms of, look, you know, you've got to be doing this, you should be thinking about this, thinking about that, demonstrating in the training ground, running with them. Not so much training with them, running with them and getting a few young players and doing this and that. That was my kind of release from actually stop playing. I give up. The summer came, we miraculously stayed up that day at Sheffield Wednesday. It was a fantastic day. We stayed up and then the new consortium come in. And that guy sat there, very, very difficult. I sat there in the summer. Remember, guys, I've just retired myself a little bit from playing. So I'm sitting in the office. We just stayed up. Paul Hart's contract, that was done. Administration, 72 people lost their job that week. There was the groundsman, there was Chris, the secretary, there was Phil Alexander, there was me on the staff. My contract had run out in 3 weeks' time because it was a kind of playing contract. It was up until the 31st of May. And we just sat there and I thought, I'm thinking, do I play? Do I stay? What do we do? How do we get on with this here? What had happened then? Instincts just taken in. People were trying to take the players. People were trying to nick the players. I won't go into names, guys. People were trying to. I was getting phone calls, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And I just pretty much rolled my sleeves up. Dan Ambrose, he's a cute guy as a medical. I remember being on the phone for about 2 hours with him, just telling him exactly what the club means, what it means to him, what it means to you, what it means to us. Joan Spinoni. Again, guys, I won't go into the detail because he's very private. Joan's a very private guy. You know, we got on very well, but that went deep. That went real deep. And he stayed, and I convinced him to stay, and I convinced one or two that we stay. Guys, remember, they didn't get paid. They weren't getting paid at the end of the month. We're in administration. But somehow, I persuaded them to stay. And pretended that there was a consortium coming in. Now, there was a few, but I didn't meet anybody. I didn't know anything. So in the end, I'll light up a little bit. I get a phone call from, I'm on the phone to Darren Ambrose, and I get a phone call from the groundsman into my office. And the groundsman says, Dougie, I need some authorisation to spend £40,000 in grass seed to let the grass screech over the summer. And I said, look, I'm on the phone to Dan Ambrose. I'm trying to actually keep up the club. Give me a minute. He said, no, I need to know now. So I said, Darren, can you hold the line 1 minute? I said, look, listen, get the grass seed. I'll give you the £40. Make sure the grass seed. He said, not knowing what's going to happen, guy. I put that phone down, picked up my mobile phone back out to Dan Ambrose. That's where we were at that time. We were talking £40, guys, for grass seed. We were talking to Akiba. Now, that summer persuaded me that I've got to stop playing and I got down to some sort of management or coaching because I was getting a buzz from, I don't know, hustling people, you know, just persuading them, hustling, stay here, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I then meet the consortium, we all know, the guys come in, save the club, or the fans kind of save the club, and then Steve Parsons' consortium come in, so I kind of put the money there, and away we go. Luckily enough for myself, they wanted me to be part of it. George Burley came in, I got an opportunity to coach, which was great. Possibly leaning towards not playing no more, you know, thinking that's that done, and getting into sort of coaching and really enjoying it. George Burley was in the right appointment at the wrong time. Unfortunately, George had come out of a situation in Scotland where it was very, very tough. National boss, it was very tough, and I think he needed a longer break. I think he was still a little bit tired from it, and he hadn't been in the championship. The championship had moved on as it did over 3 or 4 years. Unfortunately, that resulted in George not being successful, and then Steve Parish, you know, sacking him and then taking the reins for a few games, guys. So that's where it all kind of started.
Who raised the idea of you getting the job full time first? Did you have to suggest that?
No, what I'd done is, you remember, I had a little bit of kind of self doubt a little bit. I'd just been playing 6-7 months ago. I'd been part of not a very successful team that was at the bottom, down at the bottom. And I was a little bit kind of sheepish. I was a little bit thinking to myself, what should I do here? There was a very, very tough transfer room, guys. Paddy McCarthy, Jones, Maroney, Kleiner, we could be a little sod at times. You know, he was hard to manage. There was big players in there. Everson up front, Pablo Canago, Claude Davis. And I'd seen a few names, and Steve Parish was interviewing a few people, and I was thinking, you know what, maybe I should go and have a few years with the family. You know, I'll let Steve talk to a few people and let him get all his job. In the meantime, I'll try and win a few games and keep things ticking over and hand over to somebody. That was my thinking. I was never put my name in, that was my thinking. And it was a few weeks later, I had a chat with Steve, and I said to him, look, very, very relaxed, well, what are you thinking? And he told me, and I said, Steve, look, you know, you've got to be careful, it's a very tough dressing room. He knew that, you know, he there's some big characters in there. I said, it needs a little bit of kind of managing here. I said, look, you know what, I'll do it. And it's as very simple as that, I'll do it. And he kind of was taken back a little bit, and he said, right, what do you mean, you'll do it? He said, yeah. And he said, you sure? I said, I'll do it. Kind of thing, I can't just, I'll do it, I'll get on with it, I'll do it, because there's characters in there, I kind of have to know them. And Steve said, well, look, I like the idea. I have been interviewing a few people, let me just sort out a couple of bits and pieces, talk to the other guys. And then he just called me the next day and says, right, go, you're on it, you've got the job. And that was it, guys. There wasn't even any time to sign contracts. I never signed a contract, I never done nothing, kind of just... And to be fair to Steve Pice, that particular season was fantastic. I mean, just left me alone, the manager, the coach, I brought in Lenny Longs, and we just spent, guys, day in, day out on that training ground to very proudly turn around the worst defensive record in the whole four leagues. We turned it round to be one of the best in that 6 months, and it was just sheer hard work of discipline and organisation, and then that's how it came around. Quite natural, quite relaxed about it, meant to be kind of thing.
I think it's what we wanted to see as fans. You know, every set of fans dreams of having, you know, a club legend take over and take the helm. And I think, you know, we were very comfortable to see that happen.
The guys at the time, you know, it was very difficult for myself because I didn't want to be forceful and abuse my power and abuse, well, I'm going to do this. I think that's, you've got to have a fine line with that. You know, you can't, you know, oh, because I've done this, I deserve this. That's now how it works in football, certainly how it works in my world, you know. It's no something, you know, I don't feel comfortable with that, or because I scored a goal at Stockport, I become the manager. It's certainly something, you know, I never said. It just come natural, you know. I had a good relationship with Steve at that particular time. You know, he was concerned, so, you know, we would talk about, you know, I think we played Swans and we got beaten. We've got to do this, we've got to do that. You know, obviously it's difficult, Steve, we've got to think about this. So, you know, when I kind of say it, 2 weeks later, guys, I just said, Steve, I'll do it. I remember it in the office, I said, I'll go on with it. Because I was scared in case somebody came in that didn't know what they were doing, they didn't have any time. You know, and I was, here's me thinking to myself that, and I didn't know if I could do it, to be honest with you. I didn't know if I could do it, but I just knew I had a little experience the year before staying up. I kind of, a little bit of respect in the dressing room. I kind of persuaded Ambrose and Spironi to stay, so there was a little bit of love there, whereas, and I just felt that, you know, that's who we are. It really hurt me, guys, a few days later. You know, remember, I've had a lot of notes. I've studied the game for 10 years before that. You know, I've been all in the world studying and getting prepared. Didn't actually think it would come as quick. So when I got my notes, I would say, like, points of kind of key factors of what you got to do when first taking over. Number one, trust. Players don't trust you, don't play for you, end of story. That's it, done. You can't coach them, you can't talk to them. Point two, get the core players in the group and see the managers and go through the core players, what the rules are and what the the aims are and what the vision is, and then let them spread it to the group of players. I said, Paddy McCarthy, Paddy, come in here. I said, go and get the full leaders and bring them in here. Paddy McCarthy came in with Joe Spironi. Paddy McCarthy walked in the door and said, it's me and Joe, Sean Berry, Aaron Lee, Clint Hill had gone the year before. Dan Ambrose was not a leader off the pitch, he was more inspiration on the pitch. So there lies my task, guys, straight away. Two guys over the last maybe 18 months, every player I signed had to be a leader. So i.e. Damon Delaney comes in, Mary Jivett comes in, Glenn Murray come in. And then all of a sudden, guys, too, when I left the football club and I actually asked for the same, but when I was one of my last couple of months, I'd get the group in of the core group to say, well, this is what I'm thinking. There was 9 or 10 of them in the room. There was 9 or 10 in the room. I remember I'm thinking, that's what's changed around. The fundamental success here has changed around by the amount of role models, leaders, whatever you want to call them, winners. It went from 2 to 8 or 9. Now, don't get me wrong, the Sahas and people like that, you know, they weren't in the room at the time, but they were fantastic on the pitch, but they needed to have some day-in, day-out rules drilled into them. I had 8 or 9 people doing that for me.
And obviously, the core group is pretty much still there. But you mentioned Glenn Murray in there, and I know Terence has got a question about Glenn, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just quickly harking back to the defence, the change you made in the defence. You might not know, you have a club record there, 8 clean sheets on the bounce at home. I can't see that ever being broken anytime soon.
I didn't know that. It was just a technique. I said, I've got a bit of bone on you. I studied in Italy. And that's what I've done in my study. And every summer, 2 or 3 weeks over in Italy, AC Milan, Bologna, Lazio, everywhere. And I just studied a structure. And I don't care what anybody says. I don't care whatever fan, you've got to have a structure. So whatever it is, some like it, some don't. And we just got a structure in there. We went 5 yards deeper. We went 5 yards narrower. 2 centre midfielders sucked our wingers in. Not to be a flat 4, to play in our moon shape. That's the key to it. To play Balas, Saha, to protect the arrows in a moon shape. So therefore they can spring and attack. That was putting them day in, day out. For every single day, in fact, they put it into them. I had to touch on Glenn Murray if we want to jump onto that. When we were getting to hopefully stay in the division, I also had to sign scout for next year. You know what I mean? So I was trying to scout for next year and keep them in the division. That was the hardest thing. So I don't know if you want to ask me the Glenn Murray story, which was pretty much my first real signing at the football club. Oh, not the first real signing, but the first one that made the biggest impact.
Well, it was 5 years ago today, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah. But my question was, what was the main difference between the first season and the second season? What did you do with him for him to enable him to come so prolific in the second season?
Glenn was the healthy man's guys. You know, listen, we got a great laugh. It's a matter of a good relationship. At the time, we had a good relationship, but he was hard to manage. He wasn't very professional. He thought it was, how can I say this nicely, he thought it was a Glenn Murray show, which it wasn't. He questioned some professional techniques of mine. That's what Glenn's very difficult to manage. He'd still scored a few goals, but guys, I could drop him, I could leave him with a few squads. He was a giant tech, but listen, I'm the same, I'm of the same thinking of Glenn. I was the kind of same mentality as a player, so I knew his thinking, I knew what I had to do. So I remember one game I left him at this flood, told me to have a weekend with his wife and baby in Brighton, and go have a nice leisure walk him down the pier. I knew inside him it was killing him. He put a brave face on his smile and said, that'll be nice, Gavin, thanks very much. I said, no problem, off you go. And I left him at the squad. And he come back the Monday morning, and I didn't know this, I was hoping this, and the reaction exactly what I got, he trained a little bit harder. And I told him, well done, you trained a little bit harder. I said, but no hard enough. So have another week with your wife in Brighton Pier. And I see him in the morning. And it was killing him deep inside. Trying to come back, trained a bit harder and followed a few people in terms of professionalism. That was it. He come back that pre-season. No, sorry about that. He was always a very, very good player. But he didn't have the mentality to, he didn't have the mindset to go with he's a good player. All I did was marriage it up, you know, marriage the two of them together. I'd seen Glenn for many years in the lower leagues. Sometimes I've seen their fat back side. Sometimes I see them quite good. I watched them for the last time playing at Dagenham Redbridge with Tony Popovich. The game was 0-0 until the 70th minute. He did not move a muscle. And I was thinking, I've watched you. I know you're good. You're a free transfer. You're a good target man. You'd be good if we can play off you on Garvin, Saha. I knew I was going to try and get a winger on our side. I knew I was going to sell Scanner Ambrose. I need this kind of player. 75th minute, he volleyed one from the edge of the box. That was it. I stood up, walked up the ground, and literally hounded him for the next 6 weeks. And I hounded him, pretended I was flying from Gatwick every 5 minutes to stay sort of down there and make an excuse to go and see him. And eventually we got him. It's a wonderful sign for the club.
Definitely. And you know, left the club, with a huge reputation. And shame he's not got some more games since he did leave. Okay, we're gonna get into the questions that I suppose we got probably the most contact on. Mm-hmm. I'm just basically going to hand this over to you in your own words. I think is probably the best bet. You know, obviously you left the club to go manage Bolton. I think the general reaction from the fan base was one of a sort of shock at the time, and a lot's been said and speculated about. So obviously there's things that you'll want to keep close and not talk about. But in your own words, what was the situation from your perspective?
No, guys, listen, I've never spoke about it, never will, because the decision was solely my decision. Born out of the kind of, you know, what I was feeling at that particular time. Let me put it on record. It was the wrong decision, and I do regret it, but it was made by myself and only me, you know. It wasn't forced or pushed or anything like that. It was made by myself. Now, the reason I will keep it private, and hopefully it's respected, because I never wanted to harm the football club by saying anything, because whatever I said could be taken out of context and twisted and maybe levelled at somebody else at the football club, and that's not my game at all. And at the particular time of leaving, I could have easily, you know, made up one of the tales and said whatever. That is not, I've never done it and never will do it, because the club's on the momentum, and I've always kept it that way. There was nothing for me to leave the club. Looking back, I sometimes question myself. I was very ambitious, very, you know, strong-willed, hard-headed, could not take a no. Kind of thought I was King Kong, you know, thought I could fight the world, and that's it, it's my way or no way. Wrongly, you know, very wrongly. So that was, putting everything aside. The disappointing thing for me, and it's happened time and time again, I won't say anything more on this, for me is that the decision was only made over 24 hours. I didn't have enough time to think. That's what happens in football sometimes. It was pretty much, you know, Bolton have made an inquiry. They've paid a bond or a fee, whatever you call it, paid whatever money. You get the license to talk to them. I spoke to them. And I, you know what, guys, I spoke to them. And I went to the movies that night thinking, the night before I went to the movies, thinking, I don't even know what I'm doing here. I spoke to him. And Phil Gartz, God rest him, played me like a kipper. He told me everything that I wanted to hear. And the decision was made. Guys, never told anyone this before. I went in the next day, told Steve, we had a huge argument. You know, that's the way it goes. Went in the training ground, said by the lads. You know, there was a lot of tears. Drove at the training ground. And I don't feel sorry, it's just a fact. You know, cried the whole way about up to Bolton. Always think, should I turn round? But my stubborn head says, no, keep on going. I knew I made a mistake, guys, the first day I was at Bolton. The first training ground, the first training session they'd taken, about maybe a week later, 6-7 days later, I knew I'd made a mistake. But the person I am, the person, you know, I still am, that's just me, you know. I just, that's it. I've told you before, you've got a little bit to get to know me. there's some things I get wrong, some things I get right. That's just me. And that's it, away I went. And again, kept things very, very quiet, because I don't think there's no need to say anything, because the club had done nothing to harm me. They'd done nothing. Why should I do it to harm them? They were a fantastic run at the time. You know, there's a lot of respect there for the players. To this day, guys, I'm still, you know, close to one or two of them, very close. So, you know, there was nothing for me, you know, to say there.
I think we'll, I just want to leave that with your words so the listeners can just listen to that and without my comment on it. But we were also asked by a lot of people, I just want to name check a few people. You've answered their question in there. Trevor, Tudor, Lisa, Jamie Seekings, Ian Lyons, Ian Noble, and loads of others, about whether you actually regretted it. And it's interesting that you know, regret was almost your first emotion.
But, yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. It's no. Again, guys, I know here. Yeah, I'm in a good place in life right now. For the first time, I think, in a long, long time, I'm having a fantastic... I've cleared a lot of crap from my head, a lot of bullshit that goes with football, and I'm in a real good place. So, again, you've caught me in a good time right now to, you know, tell you exactly how I'm feeling, which I'm fine with.
Good stuff. Well, the last bit then, on that sort of, on that side of things, was... again, people contacting us about the story that reported your involvement in the leaking of Cardiff's team to Palace, Ian Moody texting you, all this kind of stuff. Again, something in your own words about that. I don't want to lead you into anything.
Again, you've got to be very careful. What I can say is, I'm going to be very careful here. Lies. There's a lot of lies in there. I kind of stick up for myself. I need to be very careful because there's some people have got big, they'll have looking out in back pages in big national papers, so, you know, some people wrote lies. I was put in a very, very, very difficult position by an agent who told me that Wilfred Zaha was playing, and I said to him, I know that because I've been sent a text. I put the phone down. And that certain agent, I think he's banned, in fact, told Steve Paz, told the papers, whatever. And next minute I'm getting phone calls. I did receive a text. I did it, and I had to, and I actually spoke to Steve Parish on that morning to explain that. What had come out was a lot of lies in terms of how it come around. Again, I've got to be careful what I say, but, you know, I'd spoke to Steve Parish the next morning explaining he was fine with it. So I think from Palace's end, and he taking appropriate action, I think I need to leave it there.
Yeah, there you go.
Very disappointing thing for me, that. Very disappointing. Couldn't really come out and see what's really going on. But the one person I did speak to was Steve Parish straight away and explained that, and he was understanding of it. I had a few Cardiff players alone at the time. Very, very difficult.
No, it's just important that people understand that they've got misconception about that.
And obviously, that's what normally happens in football. It's very, very difficult in football. You know, the people write stuff, and 9 times out of 10, there's not a lot of proof in it. But for me, explain stuff over and over, you kind of dig a bigger hole, you know what I mean? So to leave it sometimes and to be the hero, that's where we are. That's what I have to be with.
No, yeah, just going to say, funny you mentioned that you went to the movies when you got the Bolton offer, because when I found out the next day, I got the text saying you'd gone. I was actually standing about 5 yards away from Tom Cruise, and I won't repeat what I shouted out on, quite expletive written, and I think even he was going, but, you know, it's not, you know.
Yeah, listen, guys, you know what, you make some decisions in life. Again, I'm not going to go through it. There was a lot on my head, you know. I'd pretty much tried to be tapped up every month for the last 18 months ago. I turned down a premiership job, literally 3 months before it, the end of the season before. I turned down an opportunity to manage a premiership because I said to them, go through the right channels, and they didn't, so that was it then. So, you know, there's a lot going on in my head, and when I'm gutting myself, it was a you only get 24 hours. You get to talk to somebody. You make a decision and think, is that right? That was it. You know, and there's a lot going on in my personal life as well. We'd moved from Essex to Southern. I wasn't happy. Anyway, we'll go on about that.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk a little bit about the future. I was going to talk a bit about Bolton and Forest, but to be honest with you, you know, it's a Palace show. And I'm sure, well, reading between the lines and knowing what football is like, it does suggest that probably both clubs you were promised things that didn't materialise.
Yeah, listen, Bolton very quickly, very disappointing. A terrible atmosphere. A lot of players been a long time. Fans had used to Premiership football and they thought they were just the given right. Phil Gartson was wonderful. That was one of the good things that came out of that experience, knowing a man that's got some values and morals, and you know, in the end, you know, put his hand up and didn't say what it's supposed in the tin. Nottingham Forest, wonderful club, and an embargo. Tried my very best, but unfortunately, you know, you don't always see eye to eye. Or people, we understand that football in this country is a little bit different from maybe, you know, from what a foreign owner expects. And the best thing that happened to me was shaking hands and moving on. Guys, where am I right now? For the first time in a long, long time. And I think that people don't appreciate that 25 years in football, I'm decluttering, I'm learning, I'm finishing a degree at the university, I'm taking the kids to school, I'm looking for opportunities, but opportunities that suit me. I'm very passionate about education. I've got an education company that I founded 4 years ago now. It's good. And I'm building that because I've got passion to build that right now. Always will love football. And if the right opportunity comes up, then wonderful. If it doesn't, then there's nothing better what I did on Saturday. Taking my boys to a match with a couple of hot dogs in a programme. That's where I am right now.
Oh, fantastic. So, on last bit on the future then, we've had a few questions in about this. Probably summed up brilliantly by Rob Sutherland of Five Year Plan, who got a fanzine and a podcast. They've said, if Alan Pardew asked you, would you consider returning to Palace in some capacity?
Again, we don't talk about what's going on in the past. You've asked me sort of questions. I'm not really, I don't look back and I don't answer questions that have been put to me by Pardew. That's the thing I've got to answer. Yeah, it's not the right way to leave it. Listen, I have got a very good relationship with the board there. You know, Pardew's a fantastic manager. You know, he's done very well. Hopefully he's taking, you know, we're talking right now, not taking yet, but he's taking the club to the next level. I'm sure he's got enough eyes in this round. There's enough Palace people there to have that support. I'm always in the back of my mind, you know, thinking, you know, looking for the results. And I've always got a huge... Listen, let me just finish on this. This is something that they've explained to Palace fans. When we were in any administration, there was a small core group of fans that would turn up, like drizzly night and a Tuesday night. You know, things were going okay. We were in administration, and it's the same as our final at Wembley. All of a sudden, there was an influx of past, present Palace fans making groups on social media. I was there, remember, I'm looking, I'm thinking, what's going on here? And I could see it growing. That same core group of fans going to the heart of London and let's just save the club. Let's make no mistake of it. We get together, we get a bit of momentum, we move up the leagues, we get promotion, we're in the Premiership, and people are seeing these wonderful, wonderful fans. They've always been there. That's what kind of, I'm screaming at Match of the Day sometimes when I hear people say that. They were there when the club was in administration. So they didn't just turn up at the FA Cup final on Saturday, they didn't just turn up when it's Man City or Chelsea in town. They were there, and that's what will always attract me, and the same thing that attracted me when I way, way back and whenever I signed, and you know, there was an attraction there. That will never, ever go away. Now, there might be certain fans out there that think they say, well, I was disappointed that happened, but you know what? You make decisions in life, and you've got to move on. Some are happy, some are not happy. I can't change that. I've explained, you know, roughly where I'm at and where they're at. I'll always have a correlation because nobody can take away the things that were done and the things that were put in place, and that's what I'm happy with fans that didn't just jump on the bandwagon, they were there when the times are really, really tough. That's what always has a closeness with me with the fans.
Okay, thanks, Dougie. We'll leave it there with those words. That's brilliant.
Go on, Terence, I know you've got to say, once, sorry if it embarrasses
you a bit, Dougie, but I just want to thank you for everything you've done for the club, and as a fan, you've given me memories that I'll remember. I'll be talking about Stockport on my deathbed to my grandchildren, boring them stiffless, so thank you.
No, listen, Terence, listen, thank you. Listen, it's nice that you say that, but let me just leave you with also, it was a group, it was the fans running the pitch afterwards, it was the atmosphere that we created at Portsmouth, it was the, you know, the Clint Morrises and the Ackies, there was a few, isn't it? We all dig in again, and that's what's happening right now, you know, I don't want to say who I was texting the weekend, but I was explaining to people, you know, it's very, very good times ahead, and although that was great to look back, Terence, you know, you have a very, very, you're supporting a team there that's going to have ups and downs, but that's part of it, and that's part of the journey, and that's nice that you say, but I'm sure you have more memories, mate.
I'll just, if we're getting in thanks, can I thank you for Brighton 3-1 at the Amex as well? So that's my favourite thing ever.
Yeah, that's good. Put that on there. That, not many people know that. No, I say, this is a very proud moment of the Palace manager. We go there, we beat the first team to win at Brighton, the Emirates, as you say, we're the first team to win there, and we've done it with Johnny Williams, Scannell and Saha behind the Glenn Murray. So three young guys I felt that it was a big relief when we won, because it was a difficult decision, but the three guys from the youth team pulled up to the reserves and the first team that actually done that. That was a very proud moment.
Definitely.
That was the night I knew that Mile Jednak was a player. He was brilliant that night.
Yeah, he was. I thought the three youngsters behind them were just, you know, they ran and they tried and they... You know, and at that stage, guys, just touching last little bit, you know, I explained it when the national club at the weekend, that was a tough decision to let Sean Scanner go. You know, that boy was with me night and day for many years, on and off the pitch. You know, I had to look after that kid off the pitch as well. So to make the decision to sell him, to get the money for Balassi was... You know, it was a very, very difficult time for me. And these are the little factors you build up, you know, when you leave the football club, you think, you know, these are tough decisions. To have a guy that's pretty much, you know, I'm on the phone, you know, just night and day with the kid, and to tell him that you're selling him to Huddersfield and explaining him, you know, you're going to bring in another player in his position and you won't play as much. That was heartbreaking for me to do a little bit. Now, I know Balassi has been a success, and that's great for everybody, but, you know, that group of players, Saha and Williams and Scannell, was a moment that I was very proud of, because I knew these young guys, I knew them since a young age, and to go to Brighton, our rivals, and, you know, everybody was thinking, oh, they've won 9 in a row, and we went and won. Very, very proud moment.
Dougie, that's been fantastic. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Okay.
And from the bottom of my heart, I really hope that we see you another time soon.
Okay, guys, I wish you all the best for next season.
Back of the Nest Review Show, sponsored by PitchDMM.com.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.